Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the one and only Brunch Network, where thousands tune in weekly to listen to our hosts roll out of bed and talk all things sports and gambling. Now for the guys that help cure all your hangovers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sports Brunch here on this Wednesday, August 29th, roughly 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. And as always, my name is Joe Caputo, joined by my co-host Chris Malecki. Chris, our intro guy, decided to start from the top again today, so we're off to a good start.
Yeah, I just realized that. It's kind of sad, you know, we had a good run there with him fucking up, but I guess we'll just have to go back to the old way.
So, Chris, I am currently eating my dinner, so I apologize if I'm chewing in your ear.
Wow, having dinner with brunch?
Listen, I mean, I just got home a half hour ago. I made this elaborate meal, and I was still able to get onto the brunch literally 5 seconds before we went on the air. So I'm very proud of myself.
You know, right? There was definitely a brunch at one time, probably years ago, where right before the brunch I was finishing food, and you yelled at me. So since then I've made sure to keep my dinner away from podcasting.
Well, I have my headset, and I'm gonna be I'll be moving the microphone away from me as I chew. So
well,
if you happen to hear me, folks. Yeah, if you happen to hear me, feel free to give me a warning. But Chris, let's start off by talking a little baseball here. Actually, let's give a plug first before we get there. And that plug has to do with the Woat, which came out over the weekend. So Steve Shrum did an excellent job. He was on the brunch last week talking about it, teasing it, previewing it. And it is officially live on YouTube. So we tweeted it out. We put it on Facebook. We put it everywhere. Make sure you check that out. Chris, as the subject of the documentary, how did you think it came out?
I thought it was great. I mean, it was everything I could have asked for and more. We received a lot of good feedback from it. Honestly, too, the best parts from some of the people I've heard from, they really loved Scene 1 and the pub that Jen and Paul and Wilkie have gotten.
Scene 1 was incredible.
Just great cinema. Tells just an unbelievable story. You laugh, you cry, you are on the edge of your seats, and then, of course, there's a special twist at the end, which even myself did not see coming as the subject of the documentary. So
yeah,
I recommend to everyone check it out. It's out on social media. You'll have to look at YouTube for it, but it's a great, great piece of cinema.
All right, so the other thing, after you go check that out, is we can go check out the AL East standings, where the Yanks have pulled within 6.5 here. Have you changed your sentiments since 1 week ago when I think it was 10.5 or 9.5?
No, I haven't, Joe. I'm not really concerned. And what I don't understand is why, like, this is continuously, you know, it's like every day. I mean, Joe, it seems to be Yankee
fans. 30 days to go
in
the season. What do you mean? What do you
right,
mean every
right,
day?
But,
of course
but,
it's going to be every day.
Right, but Joe, it seems to me that there is every game the Yankees win or every game the Red Sox lose, Yankees fans throw a party as if they've won the World Series. I mean, you're still 6.5 games out.
And,
I mean, absolutely. I have not said one thing to any Yankee fan this entire time, even after a 4-game sweep, Joe. And now all of a sudden the Yankees cut it to within 6.5, and I see nonstop Yankee tweets. Oh, Boston should be worried. Oh, look at their bullpen. It's
that doesn't mean
we're
throwing a party as if we won the World Series. We're just putting the heat on, Chris.
I just see tweets every second. I mean, putting the heat on, Joe. You're tweeting. You're not actually participating in the game. So
what the hell is the point of being a sports fan if you can't tweet, Chris? Are you kidding me?
I mean, there were sports before Twitter. So that automatically invalidates your point there.
No, it doesn't, because people did other things. They wrote articles in the newspaper. They talked to their friends at the bars. Now we tweet. Whatever. Big deal.
There comes a point
don't
where
don't tell me I can't tweet about the Yankees after they win. It's ridiculous.
No. I'm not saying I didn't say that. I'm saying why do you have to attack the Red Sox so much? I
of
mean,
course
worry
you're
about
attack
your own
the Red
team
Sox because
enjoy,
the wild card's
enjoy
over.
Your
the Yankees
success.
Won the wild card. It's over. They're going to make the wild card game. But the only thing interesting left is the division.
All right, so then maybe why don't you chill out and not be such a little troll and attack the team that's still 6.5 games ahead of you when, you know, you've made up a couple games since that sweep, and it still is probably not going to happen. So, look, I'm not saying the race is over. I'm just saying every single day I see, and I'm not just saying you, but every single day I see a new tweet from a Yankee fan which is attacking the Red Sox, and it's just like, come on, like just give it a rest. Like,
do you understand,
like,
that?
Why don't
the
you
Yankee
worry
fans
about
have
your
waited,
own team?
The Yankee fans have waited 5 months for the Red Sox to lose 3 games in a row. I mean, this is a big deal.
But in reality, it's not. I mean, they got swept for the first time all year. If you're really looking at it as a rational, non-cocky, arrogant sports fan, you're like, all right, we still got a ways to go. Like, you know, maybe we cut it to, like, you know, 5-5 or 4 come that series.
That's exactly what I'm hoping
again
happens. But it
right,
can't get
but
to 4 until
yet
it gets to 6.
Right, and it couldn't get to 6 until it got to 8. I mean, what, like, at what point, like, I just don't get the point of taunting a team that is still much higher
in standing. Where are you seeing taunting? The most
it's over Twitter,
seen,
Joe. You're doing it too.
All I did was say Red Sox fans are getting nervous, and I think that they
and
are.
You said, and
when
you tweet,
see a lead
you like
go
every
from
other
10
day
to 6, you get nervous.
You
it's
tweet
not
every
taunting
other day. Red Sox collapse. Here comes the Red Sox collapse. It's like, just give it a rest.
Listen. That when if I'm not addressing you or Red Sox, I think I addressed you once in the last week. If I'm not addressing you, if I tweet, here comes the Red Sox collapse, in half jest and half hopefulness, that's not an issue. You can't tell me that I can't tweet that. What are you saying?
I'm not
my tweets
you,
now?
I'm not saying you. I'm not saying
yes,
you can
are
or can't do anything. No, I'm not. I'm just saying it's a bad look for a team that's 6.5 games back in the
it's
standings
not a bad look
to keep having their fans chirp and chirp
baseball
when they're not close.
The Yankees are the second best record in baseball. It's not a bad look to do anything.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with celebrating that. But to continuously go after a team that after the last time they played, they spanked you in 4 straight games. It's just
series,
a bad
season
look. Like,
series
you don't really
is decided
have
by
much,
2 games right now. Big deal.
You don't have much ground to stand on. That's all.
I don't need ground to stand on when I say Red Sox fans are getting nervous. Here comes the Red Sox collapse. Whether it's a joke or not, I don't need ground to stand on. I have ground. I have a Twitter account. That's all I need.
I just wonder, like, you know, what do the Red Sox have to do? I mean, they've been playing great baseball all year. They're the best team in baseball. They go through their worst stretch of the season where they lost 4 games in a row, and then all of a sudden everybody attacks. It's like
of course it comes with
the
territory, Chris. The Yankees are always in this position every year. If you're the team to beat, you're going to be under the microscope. You got to be able to deal with it. You're getting a little bitchy right now.
I just don't see, like, why the Red Sox fans also cannot celebrate their own success. Like, just because in the
they
past
are
week,
they've been celebrating all year. If I didn't mute Carabas
right,
on
right
Twitter,
right, but
I'd have
in
evidence
the past week, in the past week, just because they've struggled a little bit, all of a sudden everybody's all over them. Like, it's as if they, like, they're screwed. Like, they're still
no,
the best
team
in baseball.
I don't think anyone said they're
they
screwed.
They may not be playing like the best team in baseball.
Who said that they're screwed?
I mean, saying a collapse is coming, like, that kind of sounds like it.
Well, I mean, I think if they lost the division, yes, that would be considered a collapse, but it also wouldn't mean they're
yes,
screwed.
It would,
I think that those are
if
mutually exclusive.
Yeah, but that is such a big if. My point, look, if the Red Sox do not win the division this year, there is going to be so much shit coming towards them, 1,000% of it warranted, because they should not be blowing that big of a lead that late in the season. But we are still not there. We're still not even close to being there. And it's just like I cannot look anywhere without, you know, Yankees fans chirping here and there. And my point is just, you know, look, totally fine to celebrate your team. I have no problem with that. I have been doing it all year too. I just don't really get the point of shit. Like, and honestly too, let's say the Red Sox are, let's say when we get to the September series, the Red Sox are 7 games up, and let's say the Yankees sweep them. then by all means, after a head-to-head victory like
that, go for it.
But
that wouldn't even be a big deal at that point. It's only a big deal now because it's still possible. If the Red Sox were up 7 with 10 games to go, or 4 with 10 games to go, whatever, that wouldn't even be fun at that point. It's fun now because there's still a possibility.
I mean, I guess, but, you know, the possibility – you were the one who said that after the sweep, there is no possibility. So just
right, which is why I'm so excited that this has happened since the sweep. I never would have seen this happening. I never saw the Yankees going on a 7 out of 8 streak and the Red Sox losing 5 out of 6. Like, I never would have seen that happening.
I mean,
which is why it's so exciting.
But didn't you? I mean, you were the one who said that their schedule was so easy, and the Red Sox had 1-4 game. Right.
The Red Sox had one four-game losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, they lost 4 games.
They lost four, and then they lost two to the Indians. So 6 out of 8 they lost.
It's not out of the question that a team that has been red hot all year goes through some regression. And we kind of saw it coming. So, you know, I still just don't really get the point of, you know, going after when, you know, you still have a long ways to climb up. And when we say this right now, as both teams are just struggling at home against two bottom feeders in the White Sox and the Marlins, it's been a kind of a gross week to watch both of these teams play. I mean, David Price just got hurt. Red Sox now missing their top 3 starting pitchers. Aaron Judge is really the only thing he can do right now at this point is brush his teeth. So, you know, we're certainly not in the best of positions. And, of course, the one team that neither of us are talking about, the Houston Astros, are starting to come alive. But, you know, I'll cut it now because I know we want to get to a lot of other stuff and we can argue till our heads explode. You know, there's nothing wrong with this being a fun, you know, AL East race. I just don't really think it's there right now. I thought it was fun. I thought the Red Sox then made it no longer a race. And until it becomes a point of worrying again, I just don't really see the point, you know, because then it's like, what if the Red Sox win tonight, the Yankees lose, and then the same thing happens tomorrow?
Of course, what if the Yankees won tonight and tomorrow, and the Red Sox lost both games? Then it would be 4. Like,
but we're not there yet.
It's in the balance. It's not over anymore. It was over a week ago.
I feel like we're at the borderline there. And like I said, you know, if you're going to, like, keep, like, it's almost like when you see, like, the Barstool bloggers, like, in the beginning of the season, like, say, like, oh, yeah, like, the Yankees are in first place now. And then it's the next day, the Red Sox are in first place. It's like, all right, like, this is going to happen.
Right,
like,
but that's in April.
Like, no, I know, but I'm just saying, like, this is still something that is, you know, it's still very fluid and not quite to the point of, you know, being that much of an issue, I think, for the Red Sox.
All right. Let's move on.
And next week,
I gotta eat my taco.
Next week is going to be extremely, extremely telling. I think next week is kind of going to be the make or break, the make or break for these two teams, because I hear everybody talking about the Yankees and going on this road trip, although, you know, Seattle hasn't looked very good, and they get Minnesota.
No, the A's is really
not
the only really tough.
The A's,
but there is something to be said
about going on a road trip, going across the country and losing games you probably should win. But it's big also because the Red Sox next week are going to Atlanta, and then they host the Astros. So I think, you know, after next week, I feel like we can have a very clear picture on what is, you know, what to expect for the month of September. And then a week after that, we will finally get the Red Sox and the Yankees again.
Right. Yeah. So it's, next week is going to be big. The Yanks are hoping and expecting Gary Sanchez and Didi to come back at least. So no Aaron Judge. I'm starting to think Aaron Judge isn't even going to come back for the end of the season. Maybe like the last week. But I think it's going to be playoffs or bust for him.
I feel like there's one of two theories, and I think the first theory is what Gallo mentioned to me last night. We were talking about it, is that Judge can play, but he's not 100%, and he doesn't really know when he will be 100%. So he kind of will only be out there when the games truly really matter, or this is just a lot worse than we really thought. Not really sure how it got to this point, but it's one of those things where, you know, he just won't come back.
Well, the thing is, he broke a bone in his wrist, and it chipped. So the bone, if you chip a bone, it's still in your body. Like, and I think that causes pain. I think that's the same thing that happened with Greg Bird in his foot last year. He had some bone chips in his foot, and that was causing him pain, and he had to actually get surgery in the offseason to remove them. So that's why when the injury first came out, I didn't get how it was only going to be 3 weeks. And I guess the only way to kind of for Judge to play at this point is he's going to need to play through some sort of pain. I don't think that he's going to be 100% the rest of the year.
Yeah, you know, I think it is one of those things, like you said, broken bone. You just need to really let it heal. And I think that's something that, you know, to really properly heal is going to take a little longer than you would normally expect, especially if you're talking about a wrist, where obviously it's very important to Judge's swing. Not only does he have to let the wrist heal, then he's got to kind of get his swing back, get his timing back and everything. And these things, they do take time. So, you know, you could very well see Judge in the minors in late September, trying to work the kinks out in time for a playoff run.
So the good thing about these Yankees and Red Sox both losing right now is we have both opponents plus huge plus money today. So
yeah,
if this holds, this would be quite the night in the
It would only be fair given what happened last night. So.
Right. We had them both last night, too, or bet against them both last night, too, and they both blew the White Sox blew a 4-0 lead. The Marlins blew a 2- or 3-run lead in the eighth, and then they tied it, and then they lost in the ninth. So both teams were there and didn't hold it down yesterday, so we'll see what happens the rest of the night tonight. All right. We are down to the Elite Eight in Brunch Madness. And Chris, I think this may be one of the biggest leads that we have seen from a Brunch Madness contestant to date. Steve Sternick has an 8-point advantage over Jason Mandeel, Dwight Sheehan,
Mandeli,
and Jim Cortiglia. All three of them have 79. So it's an 8-point advantage. We've never seen anything quite like this.
Yeah, we usually have somebody, we usually have a group of people, and I think last time Strum did the little scenario generator to see who would win. Right now, it looks like Sternick is in very good shape, and honestly, I believe that he's got the four favorites in the Elite Eight to go to the Final Four. So
His bracket looks strong.
I don't see a scenario where Sternick loses. I mean, this one might be over. And what is Steve? Is he Grace's friend? Is that how he's in this bracket?
Yeah, and it's funny because I met him days before Brunch Madness kicked off. This Brunch Madness kicked off, and he told me, he was like, "Listen, I really want to win the T-shirt." Like he's really into it, and this is a guy that, you know, as I said, I did not know him until a few months ago, or actually probably one month ago, and now he's on his way to potentially winning himself a brunch shirt. And also, he told me that someone that he knew listens to the brunch. I don't even know who it was. So I guess we're starting to branch out a little bit and get some fans that maybe we didn't have a few months ago or a few years ago.
Well, that sounds about right to me.
So he's winning 87. He's got Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I mean, I don't know. I don't see how they're going to lose. But
they're a freight train right now.
The one cereal that's given them could give them kind of a problem, I guess the second strongest looking cereal right now is Reese's Puffs. But it's not really comparable. I mean, Cinnamon Toast Crunch has gotten over 88% of the vote in each of their three matchups, and there's a lot of other cereals that have struggled to get to this point. So,
I think it's Cinnamon Toast Crunch or the really the two only contenders I feel like are the Frosted Flakes and the Reese's Puffs.
Well, they will have to go through both of those to get there. So at least that's going to be interesting. I mean, at least it's not like Frosted Flakes and Reese's Puffs are playing each other and there'll only be one tough matchup. At least Cinnamon Toast Crunch will be challenged twice. But as of right now, I don't see how they're going to lose. So let's go to some of the other cereals. Were you surprised by the Honey Nut Cheerios upset, we'll call it, I guess?
Well, Frosted Flakes was a live dog there, and I had a feeling it might happen. Especially given the amount of popularity we saw in the bracket predictions for Frosted Flakes. Joe, I went back and listened to the pod last week. A wise man said on the pod that Frosted Mini Wheat's coach should tell their team that they cannot sleep on the Cocoa Puffs. And, Joe, it looks like they did. Cocoa Puffs, you know, knocking out the first one seed to go down was the Frosted Mini Wheats, and the Cocoa Puffs were the victor there. It was a bit surprising.
I was a little surprised
Frosted
by that.
Frosted Mini Wheats guy. But that was our biggest upset so far, I guess. And
yeah, well,
then
so that's
crunch.
What I wanted to bring up, the whole upset thing.
Well, because these were the first real upsets, you know?
Right. So, but I wanted to go back and look at what we should have expected. And actually, in the prediction, in the bracket predictions, Honey Nut Cheerios was picked less than Frosted Flakes to get to the Elite Eight. So that's technically, if you go by that, that's not an upset. If you look at the, what was the one you just said? Oh, the Cocoa Puffs were picked to go to more Elite Eights than Frosted Mini Wheats. So if you go by that, that's not an upset. And the same goes for Captain Crunch over Honey Bunches of Oats. So the only one out of the eight Elite Eights that were was not supposed to be there based on the bracket predictions was actually Crunch Berries. Apple Jacks was picked to go to more Elite Eights than Crunch Berries. So if you go by that, the biggest upset of the week was Crunch Berries, the one seed, over Apple Jacks, the four seed.
Yeah, and Joe, there was an interesting point you made to me. We were talking about the bracket. You know, Crunch Berries winning by only four votes, and it was very close up until the end. It was like, I think, one, and then they pulled away a bit at the end. But they're on Twitter. I'm not sure if everyone knew what Crunch Berries was, you know? I mean, and if you see the picture on Instagram, of course you understand Crunch Berries is Captain Crunch cereal with the Crunch Berries. But on Twitter, is there a chance that not everybody understood what the Crunch Berries were?
I think it had to be that, because we talked about this even before the bracket started. We said that Crunch Berries would do better on Instagram, and I think that that's been playing out. Yeah, it's definitely been the case. Even last round, in the round of 32, they only won by six votes, 20-14 on Twitter, and it was 67-29 on Instagram. So, yeah, I mean, people just don't know what they are, even though I'm tagging Captain Crunch in the tweet. People just are not doing their research on Twitter.
Yeah, very sad, very sad. But
that's
going to
be a problem for them against Reese's Puffs.
I don't think they have a shot against Reese's Puffs. It's funny to say that about a one seed, but I really don't. And I don't know about Lucky Charms. I think the OG Captain Crunch might take out Lucky Charms. A lot of people have been clamoring, saying that Lucky Charms is overrated as a one seed. It should not be.
That's crazy to me. Really? I mean,
you know,
what are these people putting as ones?
I see it a little bit, I see it a little bit, and I also don't. It's hard to say. I think, you know, because obviously Reese's Puffs and Frosted Flakes could have gotten a little more love theoretically. The thing with Lucky Charms, which we may not have talked about too much pre the bracket, was the fact that half of the cereal kind of sucks. You know, the little whole grain pieces are not great. So I think Lucky Charms may be a big name brand. Everybody loves the marshmallows, but it's just not too much substance, you know, kind of like a Kansas where Bill Self, you know, he wins the Big 12 every year because it's the Big 12, and he probably puts the money in the ref's pockets. And then you get to the tournament, they get some easy matchups, they get the easy bracket because they got the committee on their side, and then all of a sudden they get upset by VCU. So I could see
that
happening
here with
Captain Crunch.
That is probably the best of the four Elite Eight matchups. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so, because I think it's the only one that we you know, aren't as certain about the winner. As we said before, we feel like Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get 3 out of 4 blowouts.
Do you think we have – do you think Cocoa Puffs has any shot?
I think that would be the only other one that I would say maybe, but the way that Frosted Flakes has performed, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have the Elite Eight coming tomorrow.
I agree with your idea to move the Final Four to the 4th, and then that would put us on the brunch on the 5th, and then the championship would be on the 6th. So
right.
That's what we could do.
We'll get everybody post
Unless,
post Labor
Chris,
Day
another
weekend.
Idea, since the 6th is the NFL, I think that's why I originally had it ending on the 5th, we could always brunch on Tuesday next week, the 4th. And then have the championship on the 5th if you don't want to brunch
only,
the day before.
The reason I originally suggested it was just because I felt like Labor Day is probably going to be a very relaxing day where everyone's going to be taking a lot of naps, you know, after a long Labor Day weekend.
Well, yeah, but
I
think
maybe,
that
yeah.
actually that promotes some Instagram surfing. Actually, Sundays have
That's
performed
true.
Very well in Brunch Madness historically. Which that's why I put it that day, but you know, I think either way we'll get plenty of votes on either Monday or Tuesday. So we'll talk about it and everyone will know because the polls will be up whenever they come out. So check Monday or Tuesday, and our Twitter account and Instagram will announce it beforehand as well. So I mean, a little anticlimactic here. Are we just conceding it's going to be Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Reese's Puffs at the end?
I mean, if I were a betting man, and you know I don't bet, Joe, but I would say it's probably what you're looking at.
Right. All right, yeah, I'm not a betting man either, so I wouldn't even be able to tell you.
Yeah. What is
going on in this Yanks game? Can we get 2 runs, maybe? Is this over?
I mean, these first 5 overs. Well, no, it's 5.5, isn't it?
No, we need 3 runs. Maybe a Yanks three-run jack here.
Five overs are making me sick. We're not looking good in the Indians game either.
Yeah, that one's odd because it was 2-0 in the first, but hey, what are you going to do? Our Mets today, bailing us out. All right, let's move on here. 818-688-6658 if you want to talk. National Football League, which is back a week from tomorrow. With the Eagles.
Yeah, somebody told me that.
Yeah, the Eagles and the Falcons opening it up. So we'll be back with our locks of the week next week, which is
Wow.
I think people have forgotten and they missed the locks of the week. I think we'll retake our normal football season schedule next week where we do locks of the week and then in or out, we'll bring that back. It should be a fun episode next week.
I like the sound of that. I mean, you know, the lock of the week was really great because, you know, last year, maybe, you know, you can say what you want about our picks. I don't quite remember how we did, but the locks of the week were great.
We did very well last year. They were just
not, you know, yeah, we did. I remember I said I was not going to be betting football last year, and I wound up doing it. I won a nice amount of money, and I don't think you really bet much either. I don't know what I'm going to do this year because I like the schedule we're at, where, you know, which is maybe how our lives are going to go for eternity, where you have fall is going to be covered from April to October, and then you got a little bit of a break. You focus on your fantasy team, and then college basketball takes over, and then you got a little bit of a break for the MLB again.
Right.
So, at least in my personal opinion, I like that as my betting schedule. And NFL, yeah, maybe I'll place bets eventually. I never like to bet week one because you just really don't know too much of what's happening. But I am kind of excited for football, even though the Cowboys look like they're going to be a little atrocious this year. Looking – well, I'm excited for the fantasy team, big fantasy season coming up. And, you know, as you know, if you've watched documentary, I have a lot to answer for. I have a redemption tour. Yep.
Chris, a lot of trades going on in our league this year, even pre-draft, post-draft. A lot of action going on. Why is it spiked so much from years past? I feel like there was never this much action.
Well, I think one thing, which is something that maybe because we're in like the whatever year we are in with our league, if this is the seventh year, I think, you know, I think that this is kind of the time where, you know, if you're one of those teams out there who hasn't really had playoff success, hasn't really made it to the playoffs much, hasn't won a championship,
right?
You're probably
right.
Like, all right, I gotta do something different here. Like, I gotta change things up.
Winning once every 12 years if you want to break even.
Right.
But so
right.
If you haven't done it yet,
and
you're starting to get nervous.
Right. And honestly, I mean, if we've already guaranteed with a back-to-back champion with Passione that will not happen. That there will be someone after this 12-year cycle that has not won. And I know that it's not quite fair to Juddy and Will because they haven't been in the league the entirety of the time. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there. I mean, we saw a lot of trades from Jim, from Mike, or not Mike, sorry, Greg, where, you know, they have not won a championship yet and they are trying to make the moves to put them in position to win that title.
Big year for Schrum because similar to his league play back in college, no playoff success for that man. So, big year for him with all those picks and the big trade he made yesterday. He got T.Y. Hilton. It's time to put up or shut up for that man, or else he's going to start getting a documentary made for him.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Steve basically did what I did last year, where he loaded up on picks. He put himself in a great position, and we do the pre-draft analysis, and Steve was the most likely to make the playoffs out of anyone this year. So you'd think that he's going to be in good shape to win the title this year, or at least put himself in position to. And if things don't quite go his way, well, I can tell you what happens there, Steve.
Will you be there for him, or will you be laughing in his face?
I mean, I think that probably a lot of that depends on how well I do. But
right.
I don't know. We'll see, Joe.
So how did you want to we text our executive producer today. We're like, we're going to talk NFL on the brunch. Can you give us a good segment to do to get things kicked off? And we get the response, and he says, hold on, I'm going to pull it up. He goes, let me think on this. This is at 3:56 p.m. It's now 8:32.
Mm-hmm.
Is he still thinking?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, there's a couple scenarios there. I think maybe it takes him a long time to actually, for thoughts to kind of create in his head. I think that maybe he had to go over it with Passione, and I can only imagine how long that conversation.
Well, it's a
long-distance
relationship now for those two, so it might be a little more complicated.
It is. There's a lot of strain. I could see a lot of fighting between the two of them. But, you know, I would just say it's probably in Chad's best interest to start pulling his weight because it's not too hard for me to go on to ZipRecruiter and put up a little job application for a bunch executive producer. That's all I'll say. I thought here's what I thought. Now there's a couple ways we could do it. Now we could just preview the divisions, go by the divisions, or we could, you know, kind of talk about maybe some bets angled in there, maybe win totals, maybe bets to win the division. Now part of them say the reason I'm saying this is because I heard Bill Simmons and the Cuz do it today, and so I don't want to totally steal that idea, although it's a pretty, you know, not a very novel idea, and it's a good idea just to go with over-unders. But would you want to do one conference today and then the other conference will hit next week right before the season starts?
Yeah, we could do that. I do like I don't really care about stealing their segment because they've stolen – I feel like people – they might have stole our segments in the past.
That is a good point. So you know what? That's a great point. I'll be Bill right now. You could be the Cuz. And we're going to do over-unders for the NFC as we preview.
You know, we were thinking as a bunch idea. Remember back when we were thinking, like, we would start doing, like, articles on basically analyzing analysts and, like, breaking down media outlets and calling out their clubs? I feel like explore that now that we're talking about Bill and Sal as those two guys.
I think that's a good idea. You know, there are a lot of clowns out there, and no offense to Bill and the Cuz. I mean, actually, I like them, although I think Bill Simmons has slipped a bit over the years. But yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. I know that there's I think Richard Deitch is a guy in Sports Illustrated who covers the sports media for them, and he does a very good job, you know. And so, but that being said, let's get into football. We'll take their idea because, you know, the Ringer took Brunch Madness, and I saw again Barstool tweeted out another bracket, and it's getting a little sad now, you know. And I am a little, you know, if I was running that company right now, I would be a little ashamed, you know, to very, very obviously steal other companies' ideas and then just pass them off as your own.
Right. All right. So let's what do you got for me here?
All right. So why don't we start with backwards? We'll go with the NFC West, your division. We'll start off with your Niners. Why don't you give me the spiel on your Niners, Joe? Their over under is 8.5. There's some juice on the over, -135. So
oh, is there
it seems
now?
Like people are think. So it seems like people are thinking that the Niners are likely to win 9 games. I'm guessing you're on that bandwagon. Why don't you tell me why we should be believing in Jimmy G?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've made one bet so far on my DraftKings sportsbook app, and because I technically made two, but one of them was a free bet. I had to make a bet in order to get my free bet, and my one bet in order to get the free bet was I bet the Niners to win over 8 games. But I thought it was 8. Is it really 8.5 with over juice?
Well, it's now at 8.5, so it may have moved. I'm giving you the live lines from
our
friends.
I'm
going to
look up exactly what. Oh no, okay, you're right. It was 8.5, but it was even money when I bet it, and now you're saying it's
right.
-135. All right.
Yeah, -135.
I just think that there's not many elite quarterbacks in the NFL, and you get a guy that comes in here, and I'm not gonna sit here and say that Jimmy G is automatically elite, but I think there's to just get up there and say, you know, he's never lost a game in the NFL, like that's all, everyone knows that, that's fine. Obviously there's some luck involved there, but when you consider the team he took over last year, the fact that he was able to win every single game that he started with a team that previously was, I think, 1-9 or 1-10, something like 1-10. And now you get a full off season with Shanahan, a full off season with the offense. I just don't see a way that this team doesn't improve into a team that is at least, you know, in that 9-7, 10-6 range. I mean, if you won all 6 games to end the season last year, 5 or 6, I forget what it was, and then you get a full offseason and you revamp the whole team and you bring in new guys, you bring in McKinnon, you revamp the defense, the defense a little bit. The offensive line is now stacked with first-round picks. I think they're going to be really good. I'm not expecting a Super Bowl maybe first year here, but I think that they can compete for – at least a wild card. The NFC is tough. Their schedule isn't easy for a team that finished in last year, but I think that they can get 9-10 wins this year.
Yeah, I think my biggest issue is the schedule. I think they're a solid team. I think they're on the up and up. You know, I think Jimmy G is a good quarterback, and I think the offense is starting to come together. I'm not quite sure how good the defense is going to be. I think you might know a little better than me, but it is a tough schedule. I mean, you know, they have to go to Minnesota week one. They've got road games in Kansas City, in Green Bay, in L.A. Obviously, they play the Rams twice, the Seahawks twice, which we'll get to them soon.
Right.
And
one thing that I don't like stressing out over before the season is the schedule, though, because if you look back at the end of the year at the schedule, it's going to look completely different to you than how it looks right now. Like, it's really hard.
That's correct.
To decide
that's
which
correct,
teams are
but
tough.
I guess my point, too, is if I'm just thinking about the Niners as a potential playoff team, which they would have to win at least 9 games to get there, I just don't quite see the path to it when it looks like – and obviously this can absolutely change, but it looks like the Philly, Green Bay, Minnesota, Atlanta, New Orleans, and L.A. Rams contingent seems like the favorites to make the playoffs. And obviously, I'm sure – I bet you one of those teams does not make it. But right now, I think safe money would be on that, and I think I would lean more towards the under for the Niners here. I think they're just a tick under at 8-8, and I think next year is maybe the year they really start to come together and add a little more talent.
It's a reasonable prediction.
You know, Yeah, yeah. I think they'll be solid. I think they will definitely be in the playoff race. Moving on to the LA Rams, who are the favorites to win that division. They have got
Chris. The Yanks have the bases loaded. We need these runs here. Need them.
I know.
Sorry to cut
I know. As much as I hate it, we do. So the LA Rams, they've got a pretty high over under this year. They have 10. Obviously,
yeah.
They did very well last year. And there's some juice on the over. It's 10 minus 125. The Rams went out. They got a bunch of guys. They got they are getting Aaron Donald shortly, I hear. They got an Amon Sue. They got a Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, Brandon Cooks. You know, I'm sure there's plenty that I did not care to name. And it looks like they are in for a good year. They've got a good young head coach. Jared Goff is improving. What do you think? Over under 10?
Yeah, so this is where I think I start to, like, differ from the public perception is that I actually think the Rams are going to underwhelm this year. So I'm going to say under 10. I'm not sold on Goff. Obviously, he had a good year last year, huge improvement. McVay's great. But they kind of have, like, a dream team aspect, especially –
Yeah, they do.
So I don't know. I don't know if all these pieces gel in time for them to be
right
an 11-win
yeah.
team. Yeah, I'm going to say under for the Rams.
I get that, and I can totally see 10 wins here, but I think 11 to win the bet is kind of high, and I would go under as well, get the plus money on that. Again, they're in the same conference. They're in the same division. They're going to have a tough schedule. And I do think there is, you know, that kind of regression maybe a bit coming. Last year was their big breakout year. And usually in the NFL, you see teams take a step back more often than not. I mean, and honestly, the ones that are usually able to avoid that are the ones with the elite quarterback. Jared Goff is not quite there yet. So I would agree there. Rams under 10 at the bet of minus 105. Let's go to Seattle here, and we'll speed things along as we've got we're winding down the clock here. Seattle's at 7.5 wins, 7.5 minus 115 both ways. A lot of people are predicting a Seahawks demise. The Legion of Boom is over. Earl Thomas could be traded any day. And the offensive line hasn't gotten any better for Russell Wilson. Do you think that this is the end of your arch nemesis?
Oh, man, I have no clue about them. It's so hard to decide what they're going to be this year because you're so used to the Seahawks having this staunch, vaunted defense that just doesn't exist anymore. And, you know, you would think they're still going to play well at home because they even when they were bad, they would play well at home. So they have Wilson. They have Pete Carroll. I still think they're going to find ways to win games. I think 7.5 is such a good line for them. I would actually probably – I'm kind of leaning towards the over here. Everyone
yeah,
wants
I
to
think
give
I would
up on him.
I think I would lean over here too, if only because the public perception is that, you know, they're done, like this is it. I mean, they still have one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, and I think that's got to count for something. So I would go over too, and I think, you know, this is one of those teams, the infrastructure, at least in the culture of Seattle, is there. They've had success for so long that when they are on the downturn, I could see them, you know, it being a slower downturn as Torres gets a base hit into left field. And we're alive,
Chris.
Here, Joe. We're alive
here,
Joe.
Did they score two or one?
No, they only got one there, but there's still only one out. And we need two from the Indians at the bottom of the fifth. I know this is great radio. Finishing it off, we have the Arizona Cardinals, probably the last place team, no doubt. Over-under is six. We have six at minus 125. The under is at minus 105.
Yeah, I'm going under. I don't see where the
wins
are for this team.
I'm going to go under, too. I also feel like, again, they are kind of the short straw in this conference, in this division. They're going to be underdogs in pretty much every game. If Sam Bradford gets hurt at any point, which is you would think is likely, you're going to have to see Josh Rosen in there, and it doesn't seem like he's quite ready to take over. I think if he was, they would be starting him. And they've kind of, you know, Bruce Arians is gone. They've got a new regime. This is kind of, I think, a rebuilding year for them.
I'm surprised
a lot
it's that
of talent.
High. I feel like six with overjuice is pretty high.
It sounds about right because if you think about it, you have to be pretty bad to only win five games. So
yeah, but
I would
someone's
got to
take the beating in this division.
That's true. But I think we're both on the same page. So we're on the same page with everybody here except for your Niners. You have an over.
Right.
I have an under. Now let's keep working backwards. NFC South, let's go with the team that's opening up in Philly on Thursday Night Football next week. We have the Falcons. The Falcons over 9.5 is -125, and the under 9.5 is -105.
I got to take the under here, too. I mean, I was out on the Falcons last year, and they actually surprised me. They came on strong at the end of the year, made the playoffs. But I just feel like this team is going to slowly start to come apart. I thought Kyle Shanahan was very important to them, and obviously their offense was not as good last year as it was the year before. Matt Ryan, a year older. Chris, as a wise woman once said, so is everybody else in the league.
That's true.
I'm gonna take the under for the Falcons. I think they win maybe 8 or 9.
I'm going to take the over. I actually think this Falcons team is – I mean, if I had, like, a Super Bowl bet, I think I might take Atlanta.
Really?
I think they're flying – I think they're flying a little under the radar. I mean, think about it. 2 years ago, they went to the Super Bowl, should have won. Last year, they lost to the defending champs on, like, essentially the last play of the game. And I think Atlanta, you know, they've had enough consistent success over the past couple of years that it makes me feel confident that they're going to get 10 wins. They still have Matt Ryan, who's still a solid quarterback. He's got a ton of weapons. And their defense is improving. You know, they're getting better. They had a good pass rush last year, and it's continuing to improve. So I would say Atlanta is over 10, and I honestly think they might have a sneaky chance at winning in Philly on Thursday night.
Yeah, there's been heavy money coming on them. The line was 4, I think, originally. Now it's down to 3, maybe even 2.5 in some spots. So definitely people betting on them, and that's probably also because Wentz is very questionable for that game.
Yeah. Continuing on here, we have the Panthers. Their over and under is 8.5. Over is -110, and the under is -120.
Say that number again.
8.5. The over is -110. The under is -120. Cam Newton. What's he looking like this year?
Man, I feel like their number is going to be 8.5 for the next 10 years.
Well, that's perfect for us, I guess.
I'm gonna say.
There goes our bet, Joe. Out at home, Gleyber Torres. Nice.
Oh, what? They scored 1 and then he tried to score or what?
No, he a wild pitch and he ran home and got out.
Oh, idiot.
Yeah.
I'm going to say under for the Panthers.
Yeah, I'm going to say under 2. I'm not quite sure I see it for Carolina here. I think they're an okay team, but I think it's 8-8 for them. You know, they've got, again, this is a common theme, but tough conference, tough division. They're behind Atlanta and New Orleans, clearly. I think Cam Newton's a solid quarterback, but he doesn't have the weapons. I mean, he has McCaffrey, but he lost Calvin Benjamin, who wasn't that great to begin with. He has Greg Olsen back healthy, but, you know, Cam Newton really, they've never been able to put true playmakers around him, and I think that's kind of caused a bit of too much of the load to go on him, and that's not quite what you're looking for here. So I've got Panthers under as well with you. We are in quite a consensus here. I believe we've gotten four were agreed on, and 2 we are not. Just going back to the NFC West real quick, what do you think the standings shake out? What order?
Probably Rams, Niners, Seahawks, Cardinals, just as we went through them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then we've got New Orleans. They're over-under. They have over 9.5, -125, and the under 9.5 is -105.
Yeah, this one is tough. I mean, you would think maybe a little bit of a regression from last year. They were very good last year. I'm going to take the over though. They were a really good team last year. Very tough offense to stop. And actually, they started to find a defense as well last year. So they were my Super Bowl pick going into the playoffs last year. Obviously, a heartbreaking loss. But I think that they're going to keep grooving, keep this mold going. They got a young core, both rookies of the year last year. I like them. I'm going to take the over.
I'm going to go under, actually. I thought that New Orleans had a bit of an unexpected breakout last year, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm not quite sure in the twilight of Drew Brees' career if this offense is going to be as explosive. You know, they don't have Mark Ingram, and obviously they have Kamara, which is huge, but you wonder what exactly you're going to get out of Kamara, you know, if he can really get that same kind of efficiency. I don't know. So I've got the under for New Orleans, and I'm not, you know, I think their defense is solid but unspectacular. Finally, we've got Tampa Bay Bucks. Over under 6.5, this team does not have much to talk about here, so let's give it quick. Over under, Joe.
Do you hear that? Computer started playing noise.
What?
Okay. All right. No, nothing.
You're...
I think, what was the number for the Bucks? 5.5?
6.5.
Oh, 6.5. See, I'm a sucker for the Bucks every year.
Yeah, everyone.
But like,
I feel like they're a sucker team.
I'm going to take the over. I feel like now that everyone's given up on Jameis Winston, I think this is his breakout year. I know he's missing the first couple games. I'm taking the over for the Bucks.
I have the under. I think this team's going to be terrible, as it always is, and they play in a very tough division. So no easy wins to come by. I'm going under for Tampa Bay. Moving to the north, the Minnesota Vikings are at 10. Over 10 is -105. Under 10 is -125. Joe, I want to bet this right now. I mean, over 10 at -105, it seems to be the lock of the year for me.
Yeah,
this team is getting everybody back. They won double-digit teams last year. They got an improvement at quarterback, and they're a very good team. Like, I don't know, man. It just seems kind of crazy to me that you would have the line be this high.
I agree. You mean line this low?
Sorry.
This should probably be at least 10.5. I would take the over here. If you're giving me a push at 10-6, this team is excellent, and they have a great coaching staff, like you said, improvement at quarterback. Nothing really to be concerned about going into the year. Over 10.
That's right. I like that a lot. You know, they've got a great – they're just not many weaknesses all around. They've got all their big guys back. This is a good team top to bottom, and I think that they might be the favorites in the NFC right now. Packers are actually – look right now to be the favorite to win the division, I guess. It says over 10 is -125 and under 10 is -105. I think I'm going to go reverse, Joe, and go the under. I think that this Packer team – you know, is again just hinging completely on Aaron Rodgers. And well, that's fine. It doesn't always get you more than 10 wins. I don't think he has a ton to work with. I think the receivers are okay, but, you know, he lost Jordy Nelson, and I know Jordy Nelson was on the downturn of his career, but at the same time, Devontae Adams was very good last year, but I'm not quite sure if he is ready to be in that game breaker number one wide receiver role. And even if he is he going to be able to match up with the number ones with the rest of the league?
I agree. I think this is the Vikings division now. And actually, the funny thing about Rodgers, me and Vince were going back through Rodgers' seasons and the Packers' seasons since they got Rodgers. This career, and this is kind of a fitting because of Rodgers' contract that he signed today. Aaron Rodgers' career, in my opinion, has been a pretty big disappointment to date for the Packers organization. They should have won a lot more than they have.
Here's the thing. If you want to be a completely boring, chalky picker in the beginning of the season to say who's going to go to the Super Bowl, I feel like health notwithstanding, every year for the past however many years, you would have picked Packers-Patriots.
Right.
And Tom Brady's held up his end of the bargain, but Aaron Rodgers has not held up his. I mean, he's won one Super Bowl. He's only been to one, you know. I mean, Russell Wilson has been to more Super Bowls than him. So, I don't know. Bowles has been to as many Super Bowls as him and won as many. So, I think you're absolutely right there. The Packers have not quite lived up to expectations. And as good as Rodgers has been, and he does have that ring, I got to say, if somehow, I know he just signed the extension today, if you only get one ring out of the Rodgers era, that's got to be a colossal failure.
Right. Yep, 100%.
Lions, we got 7.5, over, under. There's not the same juice each way, -115.
Oof. I mean, another team that, you know, you probably make that line every year. I would probably say, I'd say under, because I think the Packers and the Vikings are both going to be very good, and or at least the Vikings will be. I think the Packers will still be good. Not that many wins to go around here, so I'm going to say under for the Lions.
Yeah, I'm going to say under too, just by default, you know, kind of, again, if when in doubt, go under because there's so much good competition in the NFC. And then Chicago at 6.5, the over is minus 130, the under is even money.
So, like, 6.5 seems high. Like, I would have liked Chicago if it was, like, what it should be, which is, like, 5. But 6.5, I'm not going to think
of
7 games.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Bears have gotten a little too hyped, and I think it's gone a bit too much. I like some of the additions they've made, but they're still not a great team, and they don't really have a proven answer at quarterback. Not that Mitchell Trubisky can't be that one day, but he hasn't shown it yet, so I would go under there too. You know, I don't really see him winning shootouts with Matt Stafford or Aaron Rodgers here.
Right. All right, so we got 5 minutes left. Let's tackle this NFC East.
Let's roll through that NFC East. We have the defending champion Eagles. Their over-under is, where is it? Let's go to the Cowboys first, actually. Over-under is 8.5. The over is minus 120. The under is minus 110. I think given all the injuries, this seems like a relatively easy under.
Yeah, it seems high.
I love the boys, and I hope that they do well this year. But right now, Dak and Zeke just don't have a lot to work with. The receiving core is barren. It was that way to start the season. The defense is pretty average, so I would say under here.
Yeah, I agree. I think that seems high, and I'm going to go under.
The Eagles, 10.5, minus 130 on the over, even money on the under.
Oof, they're begging you to take that under. I will do it. I'm going to take the under for the Eagles as well. I don't think they'll be a bad team, but that's a lot of wins to get, so under for the Eagles as well.
I'm going to take the under as well. I think the Eagles are a very good team. I think they're going to be a very good team for a long time. I think you have the Super Bowl hangover coupled with the Carson Wentz injury. It's going to lead to maybe a couple less wins than you would have thought, and I would say 10 wins seems about right to me. The New York Giants, their over is 7, minus 130, and the under is 7, even money. This is a weird team. They've got the splashy addition of Saquon Barkley. They had the Odell Beckham contract signed the other day. But their defense, which they paid a ton of money for a year ago and was good, it got a big regression last year, and I don't see it getting too much better. I think it'll still be around average. And you still have a bad offensive line and a bad quarterback. So I don't know. I think that
Wow, bad quarterback.
Right? I mean, Joe, Eli Manning is not in the top 16 quarterbacks in the NFL. Therefore, he would be below average.
Wow. It's a bold statement, but I would agree. I'm not jumping to bet the Giants this year in any scenario. So yeah, I'm in on the under.
Okay, yeah, I think 7 is probably the right number, but this division is going to kind of be a bit of a crapshoot. I feel like it might be
whatever
you know,
the
Redskins
number is. I'm taking the over.
Okay, well, I actually agree with that, and that one is their pick that's going last. It's 7, and you got minus 105
such a lock.
On the over.
Alex Smith
I like
is
that.
A lock to go 8-8.
I think Alex Smith, I mean, it may not have been an upgrade at quarterback, but I don't really think it was a downgrade. He's got some good position players. He's got Jameson Crowder. I know the running back situation is a little fluid right now, but AP is in there, and he's looked okay. And, you know, I think this Washington team, you know, maybe you get a healthy at least 8 games from Jordan Reed. Maybe you get some luck on the defensive end of the ball. I feel like the Redskins are almost always in a state of flux, and everything's going wrong in Washington. And so I think the popular opinion is to think that they're going to suck again this year, but I don't see it.
Yeah. They're in that forever purgatory, the Redskins. It doesn't seem like they'll ever break out of it. RG3 almost broke them out of it, but then that was
RG3. Rest in peace, our sweet prince.
All right. Well, with that will do it for the Sports Brunch here on this Wednesday, August 29th. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week. With the AFC breakdown, as well as our week 1 locks of the week, Brunch Madness Final Four, a lot of great things to get to. But for now, ladies and gents, enjoy the rest of the week of baseball. Get ready for week 1 of the NFL, and we will see you again next week. Have a good one, everybody.